Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. As you just heard on the news, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is our first guest today. He's proposing new rules that would do what Congress refuses to do, require disclosure of the names of most donors to groups that spend money on election campaigns. We covered this issue a lot during the election season, as many of you know. So-called social welfare groups who can keep their donors' identity secret, but then give the money to super PACs that try to influence elections. So let's see what the AG would do about it. General Schneiderman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Always good to be here.
First, remind people a little more about the issue. What's going on out there, and why do you think it's a problem?
Well, we just saw certainly the most expensive campaign in American history, but we also saw the largest expenditure through the abuse, really, of nonprofit organizations that we've ever seen. In 2010, about $70 million was spent nationally through 501c4s, which, as you said, are supposed to be social welfare organizations. They're called 501c4 after the provision of the Internal Revenue Code that enables them that they have to register under. And they are registered with the IRS. That's how we know they're there. The problem is they're not really supposed to be used for electioneering. And in this last election, it wasn't $70 million. It was over $500 million, I think, when the rest of it is counted, spent through 501c4s on campaign activities. The problem here is this. This is a glaring loophole in our regime for public disclosure. If you give money to a campaign, you have to disclose who you are. If you give money to a PAC or even a super PAC, you have to disclose who you are. 501c4s are being used and abused just so people can conceal their identities.
So right. People are giving money to them, and because they have the cover of being social welfare organizations, they don't have to disclose. They're not technically political organizations, but then they can do this political spending. Is this new in the last few years because of Citizens United, or mostly unrelated to Citizens United?
No, it is related, because before Citizens United, when you had limits on what an individual could give, it was against the law to evade those limits by trying to contribute to a campaign in cash or in kind through a third party. So this really, the door to this was opened by Citizens United, but it really can be shut down. It could be shut down by the Internal Revenue Service. They have been slow to act. So in New York State, what we're doing, what I announced yesterday was, in my capacity as regulator of nonprofits, the Attorney General's office has thousands of nonprofits registered with us, and C3s and C4s. We are requiring that any C4, any charitable organization that spends money on campaign activity, spends more than $10,000 on state or local campaigns in New York, has to provide us with the full itemized schedule of expenditures, has to provide us with a list of contributors, and that we are going to publicly disclose those on our website, which makes information about nonprofits in New York available to the public. So that at least as far as New York elections go, we're going to make sure there is full disclosure. We are preempted by the federal law from regulating expenditures on federal elections. So that requires action by the IRS or Congress. But we're hoping to stimulate interest in the issue by doing this. We're encouraging other states to do it. We're encouraging everyone to focus on this really troubling loophole in our system for transparency about who's giving money to support candidates. I mean, Sheldon Adelson gave a lot of money to Newt Gingrich, but at least you knew who was giving the money.
Right.
It was disclosed. Super PACs disclosed. 501c4s are a way to avoid disclosure.
And listeners, if you have a question for New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman about this topic, you can call in 212-433-WNYC. We know this is one of the biggest things that many of our listeners were concerned about during the election season. 212-433-9692, or post your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So as you said, you can't apply this to federal elections. So members of Congress for New York, candidates for Congress, candidates for U.S. Senate, exempt. It's only for state and local offices in New York. But, of course, we have a big one coming up next year, the New York City mayoralty. And the New York Times said your rule would likely weaken business interests who want to spend heavily to impact who the next mayor is. Do you agree that that would be one of the effects?
No, I think the effect would be to just ensure that anyone who is spending has to disclose who they are. You know, Mayor Bloomberg puts money into campaigns, but he tells you who's given the money. Well, the Citizens United decision, which I think is bad law, and I'm looking forward to it getting overturned someday, even that decision, as part of the rationale for the holding, Justice Kennedy talked about the fact that disclosure was a very important part of making the system work, that it was okay to have unlimited donations because the voters would be able to see who they were. The one major exception to that rule, the one major vehicle for abusing the principle of disclosure and avoiding disclosure are 501c4s. And at least as far as my jurisdiction in New York, we are closing that loophole. So as you say, in the mayoral election, and there are elections, local elections, all over the state next year, there may be a referendum on the ballot about legalizing casino gambling. We want to make sure that as far as expenditures in New York goes, our voters have the right to know who's spending money, and donors who are solicited by nonprofits, it may be called the Committee for Ethics in New York or something, are able to tell what they're actually spending money on and who's
right.
giving money, because
right.
they're not disclosing what they're spending the money on either.
So if you own a string of casinos and you want this legalized casino gambling, you can't just pose as Americans for a Brighter Future without telling people who you are. Do you see this as a partisan move on your part? Because Republicans defend the lack of disclosure, and Democrats seem to want more of it.
No, I don't think it's partisan at all. And in fact, in this last cycle, there were C4s that supported Democrats and C4s that supported Republicans. So this is not a problem that is limited to one party or another. I think the principles of campaign finance reform make a lot of incumbents in both parties nervous, because it's, you know, when you open up and let the public see what's going on, the public gets to
yes.
see what's going on.
But why do you think Democrats in Congress would vote for this and Republicans in Congress wouldn't? Because that's why it's stuck at the national level.
The Disclose Act, which Senator Schumer and others are advocating for, which would do this at the federal level, you're right, that has been blocked by Republicans. And it may be that, you know, they feel that it gives them something of a greater advantage. But I really think, you know, this is a pretty extreme position. And a few years ago, John McCain had a lot of Republicans who really did support transparency, and the McCain-Feingold bill had a lot of Republican support. But the whatever's happening in Washington, there's a lot of irrational conduct there. You know, a lot of these people are blocking bills they actually agree with just because it would give President Obama a win. So I don't want to opine too much on what's happening in the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that that this effort that we're undertaking in New York, and I've communicated with the head of the National Association of Attorneys General, Doug Gansler from Maryland, and we're passing our information along to our colleagues around the country and encouraging all the actors at the state level who can to take action. Some states it's the Secretary of State, some states it's the Attorney General. This will, I hope, start a movement that will have an effect in Washington, will encourage the IRS to do its job. They don't really need legislation to deal with this specific problem. If the IRS would clarify the law on what 501c4s are allowed to do, there's a lot of ambiguity, and the IRS has just refused to rule on the issue now for years. We don't even know definitively what portion of the funds from a C4 can be spent on electioneering activities without them losing their nonprofit status. So we're trying to stimulate more activity in other states, more activity in the federal level, and I think based on the feedback we've gotten and since we announced this yesterday,
right.
I think others are going to follow this path.
Could you make a determination on that percentage as the AG in New York who regulates nonprofits in the state? In other words, if you're a social welfare organization, but you spend more than 30% of your funds on politics, then you're not really a social welfare organization. You're really a political organization, and you have to disclose, or whatever that number is that you would come up with.
No, that's a determination. It's a status conferred by the Internal Revenue Service. They're the only ones that can revoke it. What we can do is try and encourage the IRS and encourage our colleagues on Capitol Hill to put pressure on the IRS to actually do its job. There are a lot of problems, as we saw when a lot of the things about private equity and what Mitt Romney may or may not have been doing came out. There are a lot of questions the IRS just leaves hanging open for years. And in this area in particular, because of the massive amount of money that was moved through this IRS-sanctioned vehicle, a 501c4 social welfare organization, they really have to act. So we're hoping to provide encouragement for them to do so. In the meantime, the one thing we can do is ensure that New Yorkers, both voters and donors, have all the information about these entities that are spending money. And this is not a hypothetical problem. We did have some C4s coming into New York State elections this year and spending money. One spent money in several state Senate races and no disclosure of donors or specifics of expenditures. And they reported that they spent a significant amount of money. So we're concerned about this because it's a real problem. It's a real problem now. And we just want to make sure that the facts are out there.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman on trying to force more disclosure of who's spending what on elections. But here is a challenge, I think, to your very premise and our very premise in this conversation that this is a problem. Herb in Manhattan is calling in. You're on WNYC. Herb, thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Herb.
Hi. I was wondering, why is it necessary to really know who's giving? I find if somebody knows who's giving, then people who don't agree with that might become hostile to that person. It seems to me we have a right to privacy. If I want to give money or support somebody, I may not want my friends or people who disagree with me to know that. So it seems to me that why would we want to inhibit even rich people, even these corporations from giving money and avoiding the threat of hostility?
Herb, thank you. And that's exactly, by the way, the central argument of the congressional Republicans who opposed the Disclose Act on the national level. They say people or businesses that spend on campaigns are subject to retaliation or boycotts and deserve to have their privacy protected. Why not?
Well, since Watergate, when they found huge wads of cash and filing cabinets at Nixon's reelection campaign headquarters, there has been a bipartisan consensus that, at least in our elections, we believe in transparency. We don't limit anyone's speech, but we do require disclosure. And the reason for this is pretty straightforward. Our goal in our federal and state governments across the country is to ensure that there's no corruption and ensure that there's no appearance of corruption. And the danger of quid pro quo, even the Supreme Court and Citizens United, as conservative a bloc as they were, all weighed in on the issue that you cannot have this unlimited spending unless you have full disclosure. That sunlight is the only check on the perception that there's really corrupt activity taking place. If you're entirely supported by gambling interests and you vote to legalize gambling, your voters have a right to know that. If you're entirely supported by the NRA and you're blocking gun control legislation, your voters have the right to know that. And that's been a principle that had strong bipartisan support up until the last few years when the House Republicans really sort of went off the rails and are essentially opposed to everything that the president would like to do.
An example from my own experience that indicates how the goalposts are moving on this issue is during the whole McCain-Feingold debate back a few years ago, mm-hmm. When the issue was, whether you could put a cap on this kind of spending in the first place, I interviewed a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board who said there should be no limits on campaign spending. It's free speech. Everybody should just be required to disclose. And then you have an open system, as much spending as people can afford, and but everybody knows what's going on. And the Wall Street Journal editorial page flipped recently to oppose the disclosure part now that McCain-Feingold has been struck down in Citizens United. But I see you do take this issue of retaliation and privacy seriously enough that you're proposing an exemption for people who can make that case on an individual basis, that they may be subject to some kind of retaliation if word of their political spending gets out. Can you think of an example where you would have granted such an exemption?
Well, there are a couple of exceptions that we have in our regulations. And these are proposed regulations, by the way, Brian. We're going to have hearings around the state, get public input before we finalize them. But there are two exceptions that really cover, I think, most of the concerns that someone like Herb would have. The first is that you are allowed, if you're giving to a social welfare organization, keeping in mind that they're supposed to spend most of their money on social welfare, you can direct that your contribution not be used for campaign activities. And they can set up a segregated account, which is done in the federal system and in some other states if they want to take that money. So anyone who wants to support, and these are organizations that are registered with my office and operate as legitimate C4s, the National Rifle Association, Planned Parenthood, all parts of the political spectrum operate under this principle. You can support Planned Parenthood and just direct it not be used for campaign ads. You can support the NRA and just direct it not be used for campaign
right.
ads.
But that's another issue.
The second exemption is that we do provide a provision for a waiver if you can demonstrate that you would be subject to some particular form of harassment other than the general principle that if your speech is free, but it's public. You can't just say, I don't want anyone to know what I stand for because they might disagree with me. But if you're the rule on privacy in donations to charities, 501c3s, which are not allowed to spend a dollar on any electoral activity, came out of cases that related to things like someone in the South giving money to the NAACP, situations where someone could demonstrate that they had an actual reason to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
So that we will provide waivers in extreme circumstances. But again, I come back to the core principle that this is supposed to the idea of American democracy is that this is supposed to be an open forum, and that the public's lack of confidence in the independence of public officials is, in my view, at an all-time high. And I think it's important that the public have confidence that to the extent anyone has special access to one of our elected officials, they at least have the right to know who that is and why that is.
Now, before you go, Governor Cuomo seems to have a related proposal that he will lay out in his State of the State address next month. Here he is speaking with New York State Public Radio yesterday.
You have all these national not-for-profits that aren't registered in New York, but we were just watching their advertising during the presidential campaign. I want them covered also.
So are you and he on the same track or different tracks?
Well, there certainly are areas where the governor can act in this, in the broad area of campaign finance reform that my office cannot do anything about, and I welcome him to act in those areas. The most important of them is public financing of campaigns to mitigate the damage of unlimited spending under Citizens United. So I encourage him to do that. I think that we have to wait to see what his proposal is. I know that there is a preemption issue with regard to any state attempt to regulate federal elections, but he sounds like he wants to try and close off as many loopholes as he can. And again, having the issue of having limits on contributions, which we were so hot on a few years ago in New York State, really is not as significant as it used to be because of Citizens United. We do have disclosure in New York if you contribute to a campaign or to a PAC. That could be tweaked or expanded. But the main issue that really I'm hoping that the governor said put this on his list that we're going to see action on this coming session is some form of public financing, perhaps like the New York City system, so that even if there's unlimited spending and you can't lower the ceiling on contributions, you at least can raise the floor to give people a voice so that there's the opportunity for a competitive election, even with the post-Citizens United world in which someone can drop $20 million into a race or $100 million into a referendum with our inability to restrict it at all.
I noticed, by the way, that the New York Times, in reporting your proposal yesterday, placed on the same page, and I'm sure it was no coincidence, an article about Christine Quinn's New York City Council bill that would seem to go in the opposite direction. It would allow unions and other advocacy groups to coordinate campaign communications more closely with political candidates rather than keeping the firewall high. Mayor Bloomberg opposes it. Where are you?
It's not something that I've weighed in on. I gather they're drafting the bill. I haven't seen the final version. I know they were going to have a hearing on it this week. It's been postponed until next week. My understanding was that they were going to limit it to the internal communications of membership organizations like unions or like Planned Parenthood, which have a different sort of protection, the freedom of association issue that is raised by any restrictions on their internal communications. But I think if they put it out there, they hold a hearing, everyone will make their points about what's legal and what's not legal and what's proper and not proper. And I hope they will come up with a good final product. I know the city council speaker wants to deal with in member-to-member communications the right way, and hopefully they'll come up with a good result. But I think they're still working on it.
One more call. Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Attorney General Schneiderman. We have 20 seconds for you.
I just had a quick question about you had mentioned that you'd like to see Citizens United decision overturned, and I was wondering what you thought it would take for the judicial branch of the government to get their credibility back and depoliticize and then get that overturned.
Nick, thank you. And we just have 30 seconds, but Attorney General, do you think that your rules here that you're proposing might be challenged in court and become a vehicle for the Supreme Court to revisit Citizens United?
I don't think it'll ever get that far. I think we will be challenged, but I think we'll win. Our jurisdiction over nonprofits that operate in New York State is well established, and we tailored our regulations very carefully to avoid that problem. I do think that, just the Supreme Court has had decisions in the past that have been overturned. I think that the assumptions underlying Citizens United that there could be no quid pro quo or perception of quid pro quo were made in the abstract without any facts. I think the factual record is being developed around the country that contradicts that. I think it's going to end up, I don't think it'll take as long as Plessy v. Ferguson took to be overturned by Brown v. Board of Education, but I think it's going to end up like that. And again, there are really three prongs to the national strategy for dealing with money in politics. The first is a long-term strategy to overturn Citizens United. The second is to ensure transparency in the meantime, which is what I'm trying to do with my regulations. And the third is having other mechanisms to balance out all this money sloshing around, the most important of which is some form of public financing of campaigns. So those are the three prongs of the strategy, and this is an issue I've been working on for many years, long before I was in elective office, and I think it is critical to the functioning of our democracy and something I feel strongly about and will continue to work on.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC. Coming up next, WNYC's education reporter Beth Fertig with new reporting on who leaves charter schools. Stay with us.